1. Begin transmission.
Hello, my name is Tobe. You know what time it is, it's 19:30. This is the daily meeting of the Dubious Goals Committee. You're listening to it right here on Anon Radio. Oh, what have we got going today? Not much. I need to go to the post office. I am just now remembering that, and I'm wondering if it's too late. No, it's not too late. I can still make it there in time, but I need to leave soon. I have to mail a letter, and when I say a letter, I mean an actual non-electronic piece of paper that has writing on it that's folded up and put inside an envelope, and then you write stuff on it, and then you put a stamp on it, and then you take it to the post office. And I like stamps a little bit, and I have two different kinds of stamps. I have Jimi Hendrix stamps, and I have Lunar New Year stamps, and so I had to decide which stamp to use, and I decided to use one of the Lunar New Year stamps. So, they'll be getting a Lunar New Year stamp. Even though their last Lunar New Year, not the coming up Lunar New Year. Oh well. Yeah, it doesn't matter. They don't know what the hell they're getting anyway. I am a little messed up today. Not doing super great. And I can't think of anything to do for entertainment on my radio show. I know everybody's listening going, oh, I can't wait for Tobe to do something. And what am I going to do? I have no idea. The only thing I can think about is going to the post office. But I can go to the post office later. You know what I have been doing? I've been watching a little bit of some old movies. And I'm watching Ma and Pa Kettle for the first time. And it's not too bad considering when this stuff came out, you know, the very late 40s or the early 50s. I think this movie is 1949, if I'm reading my Roman numerals correctly, and I very well may not be. But I've come to the conclusion, and this may sound peculiar or anachronistic, but if you know me in any sense, you'll understand why almost instantaneously. My new hero is Pa Kettle. Pa Kettle has to be the coolest guy I have ever seen in my life. He dresses like me, except in old-fashioned style. You know, they don't, you know, you look at him, he's got his pants are held up by a piece of rope. That's how my pants are held up as well. If he could have gotten cool t-shirts like the kind I wear, he'd be wearing one too. Instead, he's got, you know, kind of an old shirt going on and a vest thing, and it's pretty hip. But one of the coolest aspects of Pa Kettle is he has a deep affection for dynamite. Every time you see him, if he's outdoors, he's got dynamite in his pocket. He's just carrying it around. He's got a blowtorch in one hand, dynamite in the other. He's just blowing stuff up, whatever he feels like doing. He's got to be the coolest guy I've ever seen, and everything he says is just a pearl of wisdom. He's like a Taoist master, and he doesn't even know it. I'm going to have to get all the Ma and Pa Kettle movies now and study up on this guy. He's some kind of bodhisattva that I feel that I can learn from. Pa Kettle's friends are Native Americans. These are his smoking buddies. I'm watching this scene earlier, and they go into this shop, and they just, you know, kind of fast talking the owner, and next thing you know, they got free bowls, and so they're just smoking up right there in the store, testing out all the tobacco. And you know, if a guy's best, you know, drinking and smoking buddies are a couple of Native American guys, you can't go wrong. I relate to Pa Kettle a lot. He's easily confused, and he doesn't have much of a mind for material things. He's got his own stuff going on, and if that stuff involves dynamite, I'm pretty much on board. Pa Kettle also wears a peculiar hat. I don't know if it's a Homburg or a Derby. I'd have to I guess I'm going to have to pay more attention. But he's got weird stuff all over it. He's got buttons on it and pictures of stuff. I don't know what all he's got going there, but I don't wear a hat myself, but I do wear variously strange head coverings, and they do often have strange things on them, like football badges and weird stuff like that. So we have that in common as well. I don't think he has much hair, but, you know, nobody did back then. In weather news, I've got the window open, and the cold breeze is blowing in. I don't think it's freezing, though, but it's snowing, and it's snowing those big, huge, giant, wet flakes of snow that, you know, about the size of cornflakes. Just huge monsters coming down, and they're sticking on the grass and stuff, but it's just making the streets wet. So everything will be safe for my drive to the post office to mail an actual letter. I'm kind of excited about it. I don't get to go to the post office as much as I used to. But then again, I don't imagine anybody does. What with computer technology and all we got now. Hello! Has anybody ever tried to Mirandize a cat? Remind me to do that. And here's some more good news. I just got an email from my mom, and it looks like my brother is going to come to town for a visit in the middle of January. So, that'll be fun. Maybe I'll have my brother on the show. See what he has to say. I wonder if he's ever tried to Mirandize a cat. He does have a bunch of them. I think my brother and his girlfriend have 4 cats. It might be 5, but I think it's 4 for some reason. I seem to remember seeing some pictures recently, some photographs. He's got a bunch of crazy cats. I guess, if anything, this show is about cats, tea, and listening to weird stuff. Hey, you want to listen to some weird stuff? Listen to this.
dear one says from the lift.
Whatever's gotten into you, Calpurnia?
My mistake, ma'am.
Well, I should say it is Calpurnia. Mother, your maid is... Oh, hello.
Evening. Sorry to disturb your,
elegant dinner party for the most elegant people in all of New York.
Uh-huh.
Do you know how to make tea? You don't? Why not? Didn't they teach you how to make it in kiddie school? No, they didn't. You should get a refund. Do you think kiddie school ripped you off because they didn't teach you how to make tea? You are listening to the Dubious Goals Committee. My name is Tobe. I'm the chairman of the committee, and I'm also the president. The good news is we're about halfway through today's agenda. Yay! Not many more topics to get through here. So, if you're just now joining us, remember that you can always catch the first half of the agenda in the archive. But right now, I need to go get some more tea. So, you listen to this, and when we come back, I'll tell you something else I've been thinking about lately.
Well, I was telling this to a friend of mine who's a Cherokee Indian, and I was asking him about it, and he said, oh yeah, that's right, groundhog's mating season. He said, you know what they do? What they do? What do you mean? He says, what the male does when he comes up to a den where he thinks the female might be? I said, no. He says, what he does, he pounds his feet on the ground in front of the den and then whistles. And if she's there and she's receptive, she'll come out and greet him. I guess it's like knocking on the door and serenading. He said that when he was a youngster and he was raised in the mountains over near the reservation, he said he used to go out in the early spring and he'd go up to groundhog dens and he would do just that. He'd pound and he'd whistle, and sometimes she'd come out. If she came out to greet him, he greeted her with a swift blow from a stout stick, and he took that sweet young thing home to dinner. He said he was praised greatly by his traditional grandparents for bringing home food during this traditionally hungry time. He was able to bring home fresh meat without using a gun or a knife, just using his own skill and his own cunning. Well, I got to thinking, a groundhog is a Native American animal. How do Native Americans relate to groundhogs? So any time in my travels, if I'd run into a Native American, I'd ask, what about groundhogs? Well, I was talking to a fellow who was a Lenape Indian, a tribe from the eastern woodlands in Pennsylvania, New Jersey area. This fellow says, oh, groundhog, yes. Groundhog is a medicine animal. I said, a medicine animal? How's that work? He says, a groundhog knows all the medicine plants. That's his food. Groundhog is made of medicine plants. And what he said stayed with me. And one day I was walking with a friend along the Hudson River at a historical park. There was an old mansion with white pillars and acres of beautiful lawns with big old trees. It's a great place for a stroll on a summer evening where you can watch the sun set over the Hudson River. It was late afternoon and we were strolling along down there. I couldn't help but notice out in the middle of one of the lawns was a groundhog. Now, I saw some people walk by, and they walked fairly close, and the groundhog didn't run away. Well, down in the southern mountains, I can assure you that groundhogs, when they see you, they are gone. Well, this critter was semi-tame. It was used to people walking by. There was no hunting in this park, and no irate gardeners or farmers either. Nobody paid much attention to the groundhog, and the groundhog had learned that it didn't have to pay much attention to the humans. It had lost a lot of its fear of people. So I started going closer and closer and closer. The groundhog didn't seem to be paying me much mind, so I kept moving in a little closer. And then it kind of looked up at me sort of suspiciously, as if to say, this human's acting pretty weird. It stopped eating and it watched me. Well, one of the things I've learned about being around wild animals, I can remember, especially as a young naturalist, how I would go out in the woods, and I might see a deer, and the deer would pop out of the bushes, and its ears would be up, and its eyes would be wide open, staring right at me, its nostrils would be flared, just trying to get a sense or a scent of who I am. I'm so excited. I just look how close I am to this deer, and my eyes are wide open, just like the deer, drinking in every second of this close encounter, watching every moment, trying to get a sense of this deer, and I'm thrilled to be in the presence of such an alert wild thing, and I'm glued to its every movement, and there's this incredible psychic energy going on between the two of us. It's building, and it's building, and it's building, and all of a sudden the deer goes and charges off into the bushes and disappears. Well, what I've learned since those days is that if I can just soften my way of being, be a little less intense, not broadcasting all this intense psychic energy towards the deer or whatever animal it is, if I can just sort of be there, just being instead of doing, I guess that's what the Eastern religions have been trying to teach us for centuries. If I can just soften my look, don't stare, it's impolite to stare. And besides, that's what a predator does. They stare right at their prey. So I try not to stare. I look away now, soften my breathing, quiet my mind, and often I can see the effect on the animal. The animal becomes almost like a biofeedback machine. The animal would calm down with my calming down. And that's just what happened with this groundhog. Every time it would stop and look up at me, I would just look away and breathe. Soon I was sitting down there on the lawn. The groundhog is about 20 feet away. And I'm just looking at the plants and things, not staring at the groundhog, just glancing over now and then, casually easing my way closer. Its nose was to the ground. Its mouth was working constantly, like a quiet, furry little lawnmower. What was it eating so enthusiastically? Soon I was close enough to see. It was in a patch of clover, munching away, white clover and red clover too, eating the flower heads and the leaves too. I slowly crawled closer. The groundhog kept an eye on me, but it never stopped eating. And then it moved to a patch of dandelions, and it started eating them. It was there munching away, eating each dandelion leaf right down to the ground. In a little while, the groundhog moved on to a patch of plantain leaves. You know, plantain, plantago, that smooth, oval-leaf plant that's so common in yards and lawns. Well, it chowed down on that patch of plantain for a little while. And then it moved on to a patch of wood sorrel. You know wood sorrel? Oxalis, the little plant with the three heart-shaped leaflets. Has a sour taste. Kids love it. Lots of people call it sour grass. Well, the groundhog helped itself to a few mouths full of wood sorrel. I guess it wanted a little something tangy as a dressing to go along with this lawn salad it was eating. Next, the groundhog waddled over to the edge of this brushy thicket and began to browse on large, succulent violet leaves. Now, I'd been on my hands and knees crawling along behind this groundhog all the time. Little by little, I was getting closer and closer. And by the time it got over to the violets, I was right beside him. I was so close I could have reached out and touched him. I was trying to get near the front so I could see his mouth and I could watch him eat. And suddenly the groundhog looked over at me and stopped chewing, as if it suddenly realized that this huge, clumsy critter that had been hanging around might actually be a threat. This was my moment of truth. How could I reassure this critter? How could I show this groundhog that I meant no harm? Well, I quickly bent my head down, bit off a mouthful of violet leaves, and started chewing as obviously as I could. And while I was doing this, I tried my own brand of interspecies communication. Who, me? I thought as telepathically as possible. Don't worry about me. I'm a vegetarian. This week, anyway. See, I eat the same things as you. Good leaves. Yes, sir. Love them leaves. I chewed and I smacked my lips. And as their green, mild, slightly sweet flavor filled my mouth, I remembered how much I really do like violet leaves. You know, they are edible and nutritious, and I bent down and ate a few more. Well, this apparently satisfied the groundhog. He went back to feeding, and the two of us continued munching away there, side by side, for quite a while. And as I munched, I felt like I was beginning to understand why the groundhog is known as a medicine animal. In the 20 or so minutes that I'd spent with that groundhog, it showed me probably five of the most useful and abundant healing wild plants on the North American continent. Take clover. Red clover blossom tea is one of the favorite healing tonics of herbalists. It has even been shown to have constituents that fight cancer. Dandelion is one of the richest natural sources of vitamin A and potassium and a bunch of other nutrients, and is tonic for the liver and the urinary system. And we grow dandelions in our garden on purpose, and we eat the greens. And you can eat plantain leaves, too. You can crush the leaves up and make a poultice that's a great remedy for bee stings, mosquito bites, and skin irritations. Sorrel makes a great addition to salads, and violet leaves are edible and nutritious and can be made into a healing poultice or a salve. Yeah! Medicine animal. I think I know what they're talking about. My Lenape friend said, we often use the groundhogs to make medicine drums. And I thought, oh, a medicine drum. I might not be able to make a banjo, but a medicine drum, I could probably make a drum. So I made a hoop out of a wide white oak splint. And the next time I got a groundhog hide, I stretched it over the hoop and listened to the sound. I asked a Chippewa Cree friend of mine about groundhog. He said, my uncle was named Groundhog. How would you say that in your language? I asked. Woodchuck. Is that where we get the name woodchuck? Well, you know, I went and looked it up in the dictionary. It said woodchuck as a corruption of the Algonquin, woojack. They spelled it W-U-J-A-K. I guess woodchuck was as close as English speakers could get to the Algonquin Indian word woojack. How much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck wood? Well, it's probably as hard for a woodchuck to chuck wood as it is for an English speaker to pronounce Algonquin. I still can't answer that old riddle, but it sure does make a lot more sense now. Well, how does woodchuck translate, I asked. He thought about it for a minute. Woodchuck was not a word he had to translate very often. He said the core of the word is nibbler. It's one of the nibblers. Then there's prevalent in the word. And stout is a part of that word, too. Yes, he said it would be prevalent stout nibbler. Sounds like common fat rodent to me. I learned some other native animal names that day. See if you can recognize this one. A raccoon? Yeah, it translates out as shoreline wanderer. That makes sense, because that's just what raccoons do. Whether it's a creek or a lake or a seashore, coons spend lots of time right on the shoreline. How about this name for the little ground squirrel? A chipmunk, see? Cute little one who runs down the tree head first. Or how about this one? A skunk? Yeah, right, skunk. It translates out as a stimulating puff of wind. Isn't there anything to the word about smell, I asked my friend. He said, no, but stimulating is definitely a part of that word. He said, we see groundhog as an intermediary spirit. An intermediary spirit, I asked. He said, yes, an intermediary between Mother Earth and Father Sky. Because it spends half the year deep within the bowels of the Earth Mother, and yet when it emerges from the depths, it looks skyward and has the whistle of the eagle, and the eagle is the high-flying, far-seeing master of the heavens. This shrill, explosive whistle, this is what gives the groundhog its name, whistle pig, and that's what groundhogs are called all through the southern mountains. The early French voyageurs heard the groundhogs and their western cousins, the marmots, calling to each other, and they gave them the name Le Siffleur, the whistler. And this is what groundhogs are called in parts of Quebec today. Woodchuck, whistle pig, call him what you will. Woodchuck, whistle pig, call him what you will. We'll sell that hide for a $2 bill. Oh, groundhog. Thank you.
suppose you know who that was this morning, do you? That was no less a personage than the Minister of the Interior. A new Minister of the Interior. What they call a very new broom. Well, these new ridiculous ideas have come at last, and orders are orders. Though I may say to you in confidence, I do not approve. An eye for an eye, I say. If someone hits you, you hit back, do you not? Why then should not the state, very severely hit by you brutal hooligans, not hit back also? The new view is to say no. The new view is that we turn the bad into good. All of which seems to me to be grossly unjust, eh?
Sir, don't build the hole, you scum!
You are to be reformed. Tomorrow you will go to this man Brodsky. You will be leaving here. You will be transferred to the Ludovico Medical Facility. It is believed that you will be able to leave state custody in a little over a fortnight. I suppose that prospect pleases you.
Answer when the governor asks you a question!
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. I've done my best here. I really have, sir. I'm very grateful to all concerned, sir.
You gonna give me the brutes?
No.
Okay.
All right, kids. There's the theme music. You know what this means? It means another show, another day, another lack of dollars. I'm glad you could join me today in our what would normally be the slot for the Dubious Goals Committee meeting. My name's Tobe. I'm the chairman of that committee, but today that committee is on hiatus, so we just listened to some cool troop tunes, but now we're running out of time. So let me just say thanks for listening. And stay tuned for future episodes where you will be able to hear the normal discussions, minutes, arguments, and parliamentary procedure of the Dubious Goals Committee. And until that time, have a good one. I know I will, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This is the end of the line for me. The end of the line, yes.